Welcome to the My Third Bloom podcast, where we get into unfiltered conversations about the powerful journey of aging gracefully during perimenopause and menopause, breaking taboos and embracing transformation. I'm your host, Trisha Blake, founder, CEO, and Chief Awesome Officer of My Third Bloom, where we are on a mission to empower those experiencing perimenopause and menopause. We're guided by empathy and fueled by innovation. We provide support, education, and resources. Whether you're navigating the roller coaster of hormonal changes or seeking a supportive community, you're in the right place. Buckle up and get ready to bloom with strength, wisdom, and grace. Hey, listeners, welcome to the next episode of the My Third Bloom podcast. Our next guest is known as the Menopause Mogul. She's a board-certified obstetrician, gynecologist, and business coach for Black women over 40. Through her Menopause Mogul's online coaching program, she empowers women to reclaim their power and joy during their menopausal transition, helping them launch their own businesses with more energy, clarity, and focus. She's also the best-selling author of Loving Me, Myself, and Her Through Perimenopause and Beyond, and the host of the Menopause Moguls podcast. Welcome to another episode where we'll have an engaging conversation about perimenopause and menopause, aging well, empowerment through knowledge and education with a little educate to elevate, if you will, and dispel some myths and misconceptions about this next phase of life. Please join me in giving a warm My Third Bloom podcast welcome to Dr. Joyelle Ballard. Welcome.
Hello, hello, Trisha. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, thank you for saying yes. You know, it's fantastic to have you on the show. I'm always jumping in people's DMs. I feel like that's my
your other job.
That's my other job, jumping in people's DMs. Let's talk about menopause. How are you?
Yes.
I think you'd be an amazing guest on our podcast. But yes, I follow you on social media, and I thought you would make an amazing guest to share everything about the menopausal transition. I love your motto, live for today, laugh often, and love yourself. So hoping we can get into, you know, a little bit about that and how we can view even just like the mindset shifts, where we can shift to the idea about celebrating yourself so we don't fall into, you know, those specific traps of shame. But before that, let's a little soft landing. Share a little bit more about your journey.
Oh, where do I begin? So I am, you know, as you said, an OBGYN. I'm also a mommy of three, wife. And, you know, my journey into this platform of educating and empowering women through perimenopause, menopause, and beyond really started with my own journey, right? So you have to, it's interesting to know that, you know, when I first came out of practice, right, like I saw menopausal women, I'm like, I don't know what to do with y'all. Like, we didn't have a lot of education in medical school and training. So when I have patients come in, I was like, oh, man, now I got to go. Let me go research something real quick before I go and see this patient. And that was in the beginning of my practice. So I really had to teach myself, right? I had to do research. I had to teach myself about menopause, all the things, and how to manage my patients. And then obviously, you know, I got better over time. And then as I entered my 40s, like really the tender age of 39, I started having these horrific night sweats. And like most women, I was in denial. I was like, that ain't no night sweat, child. You ain't, we ain't ready for that. But it was. You know, after that, I actually got pregnant. So those of you who don't think you can get pregnant in perimenopause, you can.
Let them know.
Like, just so you know. So I got pregnant. Unfortunately, that pregnancy ended in a miscarriage, but I got quickly pregnant after that and had my son, which is my third child. And after I started breastfeeding him for about 6 months or so, my night sweats came back with the vengeance, along with mood swings, just very irritable, Crazy acne on my face, fatigue. I just did not recognize myself and I didn't like myself. And I dealt with that and I pretended though. I went to the office seeing my patients. I got my cute shoes on and I'm like, hey, how you doing? But really came to a point where I wasn't like, hey, how you doing? I'm like, okay, what are you here for? Just very, just get straight to the point. And I thought that I needed to make a change, right? But still, I'm a mom, I'm a wife, I'm a busy doctor. I'm like, I don't have time to, do the self-care and do this and do that. And it was one day where I actually picked my kids up from school after being in a long day in the office, and I was falling asleep at the wheel. And I remember praying to God, like, okay, please get me home. And the kids in the back, they eating snacks and watching, a little video in the back, have no idea that mommy is struggling to get us home. So thankfully we did make it home. And that was the day that I decided, like, I gotta do something. This is not sustainable. I need to do something. And that's when I decided to really prioritize me. And once I did that, things shifted so much in regards to my symptoms and the way that I looked at myself and felt about myself. And that essentially kind of started my journey in writing my book and then just really being more passionate about empowering my patients in their perimenopause, menopause journey. Because the other thing was, patients would come in and ask me, like, okay, what should I read? What should I read? And there were things out there, but there was all white women on the cover. And I really wanted to create something with a black face on it, which is why I wrote my book and put my face on it. Just so that black women, women of color can also see that, yeah, we also go through these things and our experience can be different. So to speak to that too. So that's how I've basically started, I wrote my book, started my platform, and then ultimately started my Menopause Moguls coaching program to also speak to those women, who are struggling with perimenopause and menopause, but also want to do something more in their lives, like start a business. But it can be hard, dealing with the symptoms. So I wanted to create a platform and a space for women to be able to do that, and
Well,
especially Black women. So
thank
that's why
you.
I'm
Well, we're glad you're here. I like that you touched on
here.
the experience. Everyone will experience it in some shape or form, like go through the menopausal transition. And there's a perception that the experience is different, but we don't often talk about that experience being different for women of color compared to other races. And have you, in terms of, your practice, like how does your approach factor into cultural nuances as it relates to that?
So I mean, I approach, all women in my practice with the idea of not just learning about what they're the symptoms that they're actually experiencing, but also what else is going on in their lives. Relationship wise, work wise, children, like all the things. And I realized just interacting with white women compared to black women, and also just obviously being a black woman, I noticed that we are very we want to give the perception that we are very strong
We are okay.
and we're not bothered by things, right? So I really had to, dealing with white women, they were very, this is what's going on. I feel horrible, blah, blah, blah. They're crying and all these things. But black women, very stoic, very, I'm having this problem, but I'm okay. So I really had to kind of, go a little deeper with them, right? And really share my own journey, share my own, symptoms, be vulnerable with them so they can also feel that they can be vulnerable with me and sharing different things. And recognizing that, you don't have to be strong all the time, right? It is okay to admit that you are struggling, that you are feeling like you're losing control. So really just opening more of a space, a safe space for women, especially Black women, so that they're able to share what they're feeling, what they're thinking, so that we can actually get to the root of, what they're experiencing, and they can ultimately feel better in their skin.
I love that. I was saying similar that I representation matters, and I didn't necessarily see people of color talking about perimenopause. And I think of the Golden Girls. I always use the reference about the Golden Girls, and if it was Blanche talking about her hot flashes, I'm of the age to know about the Golden Girls.
Yes, we are. I love the Golden Girls, by
Right, and Samantha was the other reference from with Sarah Jessica Parker, Sex and the City, the
Oh,
television series. And then I'm thinking about, well, what happened to like Claire Huxtable? Like
Yeah, she didn't talk about that.
Claire didn't talk about that. I would love to have a conversation about, the writers. So Claire didn't go through menopause. Was she that young? Like Claire had some big kids, so she would have been in her 40s, no?
She had kids in college. I mean,
So what happened? But representation definitely does matter, and the differences are important. And how do we get to see ourselves in the women's wellness equation when we are okay all the time? And we're strong all the time. There's the perception we need to be. And that is definitely a shift that needs to continue to happen, and it is happening. But I'm glad that there are people like yourselves that are sharing that experience and making sure for people to know that representation matters. There's look at menopause, the word itself, like me. Where is the me in menopause? And how do we get people, how do we get people there?
Because a lot of people, a lot of women, like you had said before, menopause is something that everybody will go through, right? Every woman will go through, but a lot of women don't want to avoid it at all costs. Like, how can I just avoid it? How can I just skip it? you can't.
You can't.
It's not really possible. But really just making that mind shift of, menopause is actually an opportunity for more self-discovery, more self-awareness, more self-compassion, to really get to who you are and who you are supposed to become as you are entering your 40s, 50s, and 60s. So really seeing, it is a opportunity to actually, celebrate ourselves and really be intentional about taking care of ourselves during this time of life, because we've spent most of our lives taking care of everybody else. It's not about me, it's about everybody else. So like you said, the me in menopause, really being intentional about taking care of me is really important in this process, in this journey.
And for self-advocacy, in particular, I think you said something about self-advocacy. I saw something on socials. Self-advocacy can move you from inner adversity to inner alignment. Now, 90% of women weren't really educated about perimenopause or menopause. That stat's probably even higher. And 73 or higher, maybe 80% don't even treat their symptoms because they don't know that they can't. So what kind of advice do you give to people to move from the I don't know, I have no idea, because we didn't necessarily apply that language. Like it's something that's now having its day, let's say, in the media, but even with that, we still don't know. Like it's just another symptom. I feel off, I don't feel well, this feels strange, but not attributing it to something. But how do you advocate for yourself? How do you move from this I feel awful, the night sweats, the insomnia, every other one of the symptoms are wreaking havoc on you.
Right.
And to be able to celebrate that when you don't know, how do you help people to navigate that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question. Because it's hard. Again, when you're so used to taking care of other people, and you know, really advocating for other people a lot of times and not yourself. So I typically approach women with the question, you know, are you worth it? Right? Are you worth getting to doing the things you need to do to get the answer that you need in order to feel better, in order to stop feeling awful, giving yourself permission to take care of yourself and get it, you know, creating the time to find out what you need to do in order to feel better. You know, whether it's, you know, taking a break from whatever tasks you're doing, taking a break to go see your doctor and have a conversation. Right. Because, you know, a lot of us can also, you know, definitely can just work and like, okay, I'll make that appointment at some point. Like I'll make it at some point. But I try to inform women that we have to stop being reactive, or we're just waiting for something to happen before we actually do something, and start being proactive. And proactive in the sense of sitting still with ourselves, taking the time to sit still with ourselves and kind of feel what we're feeling, and then ask ourselves the question, okay, what do I need and what do I want? And then once you know, and sometimes we have that question, we ask that question, I don't know. I have no idea. And we don't know because we don't take the time to sit with ourselves to figure that out.
Right.
So in order to advocate for yourself, you actually have to know what you're feeling, know what you need or what you want, so that you can take that now next step to figure out, okay, do I need to see my GYN? Do I need to see a therapist? Do I need to just talk to a friend just to get it out, right? Because a lot of us, again, we're going through these feelings of feeling awful, feeling this, feeling that, and not saying anything to anybody, right? So making some kind of connection with a friend or your spouse or whoever that person is that you are able just to get it out, because holding it in just causes more adversity, you know, within yourself, and that causes more stress and actually worsens, you know, how you feel and your menopausal symptoms. So really just, again, just giving yourself, asking yourself, you know, the question of, am I worth taking the time to take care of me? And sitting still to figure out, you know, what I'm feeling and what do I want as I'm going through this transition? And then ultimately, you know, asking for it, whether it's, you know, is it from your doctor? I'm having this is what's happening. Can you help me navigate what's going on? You know, what are my options as far as what I'm feeling? Or is it your partner? You know, I'm tired. Like, can you wash the dishes? Can you do whatever? You know? So I think a lot of self-advocacy also comes with vulnerability, where you actually have to admit that you're feeling a certain way or that you need help. And a lot, you know, I can speak from personal experience. I didn't like to be vulnerable. Again, it goes back to, I need to be strong. I need to be this. I need to be the leader. You know, I grew up as the oldest of 8 children. So I was always like taking care of everybody. Right. So really just changing, that narrative in your head about, you know, who you're supposed to be. And as opposed to really, giving yourself permission to be vulnerable and ask, yourself what you want, and then be able to ask it from whoever you needed to get that from.
Thank you. I love that. I wanted to touch on something. Having the conversation with your doctor. So that can be a challenge.
Yes.
At times. And
yeah.
What question, like, are there, you're a doctor. So when women come in and they're asking questions, Are you probing more? What are some questions they should ask? Because sometimes they get shut down. It's like, oh, you're too young. You're too young to be having that symptom right now. How do
Right.
you advocate for yourself when you're supposed to be having the conversation with somebody who is supposed to help you,
Yeah.
can help you?
Yeah. I totally get it. And I know what happens, right? Like, there are plenty of women out here still who are going to see their doctor and they're not being seen, they're not being heard. So I totally get that. And it is tough. That is to, go into a place where you're supposed to receive help and support, and you get, like you said, just shut down and you leave with more questions and more frustration. And what I say to that is, first, when, leading up to this point, we're supposed to be going to see our GYNs or our doctors on a regular basis, right? So potentially trying to start a rapport even before you start getting to the point of struggle. But I know there's some of us who can't do that for whatever reason, or we're just now approaching a doctor with certain things. So when you go in with a problem, first I advise everyone to write everything down. Just write it down so you won't forget, right? And then number two, be okay with addressing just one of the problems that you're having and then have a follow-up appointment. Because I find a lot of women come in and they have this whole list of things and expect in our 15-minute visit to cover everything. And it's just not possible, right? So, but we are able as doctors to book a 30-minute appointment so we can have more time to have discussions and, kind of rash it out to, hash it out to see what we need to do moving forward. So, having a list, a journal of what's happening, and then being able to make a follow-up appointment. But when you if you encounter a doctor who, if you are not feeling seen, you're not feeling heard, I say that you can say, well, doctor, say they mentioned symptoms, oh, you're too young. And my advice to response would be, well, I understand that you're saying that I'm too young, but I'm feeling what I'm feeling. So what are my options? And if they still shut you down, then I am all for firing your doctor and finding somebody else. Right. So I know that, sometimes doctor shopping can also be frustrating and annoying, but there are times when it's necessary. Because you really need to find a physician that is on board with you working as a team, not me as a doctor telling you what to do and you just be like, okay, I'm gonna do that. Like, no, you should be able to be involved in the decision making of what we're doing as far as what your options are as far as treatment and management, things like that. Working with a doctor, creating a team effort where you are feeling comfortable what they're saying, or you feel comfortable asking a question, well, I don't understand that, or you're suggesting that, but are there other options? Like, doctors would suggest hormone replacement therapy. What I'm more interested in natural therapies, right? Like, so what are some options there? So you have a relationship with that doctor to say, like, I hear what you're saying, but these are my concerns. And can you speak to that, or can you give me other options that will help me, kind of ease my mind in regards to moving forward? So I think, just in general, having that doctor-patient relationship is so important, where, again, you are in a space where you feel that you're being seen and heard. But if you are in that doctor's office and you're not feeling seen and heard, then, like I said, you can either tell the doctor, I hear what you're saying, but I still don't understand, or I still feel confused and I still feel what I feel. So what are my other options? Versus go to see somebody else, find a second opinion, find a different doctor that will listen to you and you feel that you are actually involved in the decision making and moving forward from there.
Thank you. And even now, the North American Menopause Society, I believe they have like a find a practitioner, like
Yeah.
certified menopause specialist in your area. I
Right.
linked to it on my website directly to NAMS. in case people have to get a second opinion. We know the wait times also can be a deterrent. It's like, well, I want my answers now, but ask, you know what I mean? Put the asks in, get the referrals. There are people that are out there that actually do specialize in this.
Right.
And will be able to, should be able to, you hope, you know what I mean, have better treatment plans or understanding for your situation instead of dismissing you.
Right. Right.
You talked about a little bit about hormone replacement therapy. I was like, oh, can we jump on that? Can we jump on that? Because, you know, hormone replacement therapy, that's quite controversial.
Yes. Yes, it
and, is. And especially from that, was it the Women's Health Initiative study?
Right.
And all the risks like breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
What's your opinion on the appropriate use of HRT during menopause? Like your thoughts on that? Because there's more in there. There's so much. Can we enlighten some people on the definition about the hormone therapy versus bioidentical hormone therapy?
Mm-hmm.
Some common myths or misconceptions, and how do you, there's going to be skepticism. People might be hesitant.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's light it up right now.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's a lot. So yeah, the Women's Health Initiative study, or WHI study, basically. So, you know, when it first came out, hormone replacement therapy, or HRT, or now it's called hormone therapy, or MHT. But when it first came out, hormone replacement therapy was great. You know, the best thing ever, right? Everybody was on HRT. Doctors were giving it out like candy. It was great, 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 great. And then what happened was there were women who started getting breast cancer and cardiovascular disease, heart disease, and things like that. So like, oh no, stop it. Don't stop HRT. It's going to kill you. Just stop it at all costs.
Mm-hmm.
So they did a reevaluation of this study, and they realized that those women who were getting all these problems were women who were well into their 60s and 70s, like, you know, mm-hmm. late 60s.
Yes.
So after they reevaluated and, you know, really looked a little deeper into the women that they were studying, they realized that HRT, MHT is actually safe for women, especially those who are early on in their menopausal transition, like, you know, perimenopause. So menopause essentially is when you've had 12 consecutive, you know, months without a period. So women who are, you know, early menopausal or perimenopause, they are deemed to be safe to take HRT with minimal risk of breast cancer and heart disease, because they realize that those risks were increased because those women in that study were so much older.
Mm-hmm.
So perimenopause starts as early as 39, right? So, you know, the average age of menopause is 50, 51, 52. So they realized that women who start HRT, you know, late, early 40s and the 50s, those risks of breast cancer and heart disease and things like that are not, I mean, obviously there's always a risk of things, right? Mm-hmm. But it wasn't as great as a risk as they thought it was. So HRT has been deemed safe. And obviously there's women who can't take HRT if you have an active breast cancer, or, you know, risk of blood clots and things like that. So there are some women who can't take HRT because of those reasons. But overall, generally healthy woman, HRT is safe if you are offered it early on in your menopausal transition. And then the question is, well, how long can I be on it? Like, you know, can I be on it forever? Which has also been controversial. So as far as the study goes, it is safe to be on it, you know, for the duration of 10 years. Mm-hmm. And then typically at that 10-year mark, we kind of do a reevaluation to figure out, you know, should we wean you off versus keeping you on? Mm-hmm. I've had patients who stay on it, you know, well into their 70s and 80s. They like, don't touch my HRT. Don't touch it.
I feel great.
I feel great. And I'm not, if it ain't broken, I'm, you know, if it, you know, I'm not gonna mess with it. So But that goes along with shared decision making, right? So also giving them, so they, so the study, as far as HRT, they're saying that if you stay, if you start the HRT well after menopause, so 10 years after you've been diagnosed, not diagnosed, but deemed menopausal, 10 years after deemed menopausal, that risk of breast cancer and heart disease, that can go up. So, or if you've been on it for longer than 10 years, that potentially can go up. So having that conversation with those women who are on it still in their 70s, you know, this is, these are the risks. Are you willing to stay on? Some of them say no, some of them say yes. There you go. So again, they also being a part of that decision, you know, knowing the risk and knowing what, you know, could potentially occur if they do, you know, decide to stay on it. I honestly haven't had a woman have any issue being on it for that long. Knock on wood, thank God. But you know, again, just having those conversations and that knowledge to say that, you know, you can stay on it if you want to, if you need to, you know, moving forward. So with HRT, there are, you know, like you said, bioidentical hormones and basically what we call synthetic hormones, right? So bioidentical hormones typically are plant-based, and they are what it says. It's identical, almost identical to the hormones that your body biologically makes. So, and then some people, I know there's some people who think when they think about bioidentical, they think it's compounded. It has to be a compounded hormone. And that's not the case. There are bioidentical hormones that we, you know, that we prescribe that are FDA approved, that, you know, and it, the idea is that bioidentical hormones, because they're bioidentical, they are, you know, number one, potentially can be safer, and number two, can have a better result. Because it's working, you know, as your biological hormones would if you, you know, if you were just not to take anything. So I personally would prescribe bioidentical hormones first. And if women didn't tolerate it for whatever reason, side effect wise, or, you know, just didn't feel like it was doing a whole lot as far as the symptoms, we can potentially move and do the synthetic options to see if that would work better. But again, having those conversations, figuring out, you know, what, how they're feeling, what their symptoms doing while they're on their hormones, it really, you know, kind of depends. And obviously everybody is different, right? So with that, again, just having those follow-ups with patients to figure out if this particular medication doesn't need to be increased as far as the amount of hormone versus decrease. And hormones in general, they come in different forms. They come in patches, creams, gels, pills. The research has shown women who have who use HRT with the patch, they can have a decreased risk of developing blood clots. So a lot of times we prescribe the patch first just to potentially decrease that risk. And then again, take it from there and see if that works for them versus not. And we talk about, you know, other things. So there are, like I said, a lot of different forms of HRT. And it, based on the symptoms that the woman is having, and again, what they are willing to tolerate or willing to take, depending on which, you know, which route they want to do, and just, you know, move forward from that. What else? The other thing that I think people, when we talk about hormone replacement therapy, there's also the genitourinary syndrome of menopause, which is the vaginal dryness and irritation, things like that. So when we talk about handling that type of those type of symptoms, vaginal estrogen has been has had the most research in regards to being the best option to help with those type of symptoms. There are women who have a history of breast cancer who kind of wonder if they can take vaginal estrogen, and we typically, you know, discuss it with their oncologist to see, you know, if their breast cancer is hormone sensitive, is, are they a candidate for vaginal estrogen? Some oncologists are okay with that, you know, with them using it, some are not. So again, just creating a team around you who are talking to each other, talking to you, figuring out what you want to do, as far as using that type of treatment. But there are a slew of other things that are out there that can help women with breast cancer when it comes to those vaginal and urinary symptoms. Again, like I said, with the hormones in general, it really kind of depends on the symptoms that the woman is having to figure out, what is what, in regards to what's the best option for them. But I think just in general, HRT is safe if you don't have any other, other risk factors. And again, we also take into consideration women who may have a family member who took HRT and had an issue or whatever. So I really try to take all those things into consideration to figure out again what the best options are for that person. Because there's so many HRT options out there. But it's also non-HRT things out there too. So like, having that conversation too to figure out again, talk about the risk, and it comes down to what she wants to do as far as, treatment-wise and moving forward.
So being able to provide them with information so that they can make an informed decision as to what is the best intervention, I guess, for them. That was a master class right there on how to place a
I'm gonna say
therapeutic
that was a
bar.
lot.
MHT. No, it was neat. Listen, there's some listeners that said, can you touch on this subject? So here we are. Here we are talking about menopause hormone therapy, HRT, and back in the day, it's still interchangeable. But that was great. I just learned a whole lot with that. So thank you very much. Before we wrap up, let's have a little bit of fun. Let's talk to young Joyelle before she became Dr. Joyelle. If
Oh,
you, yes.
we're going there.
We're going there. If you could give one piece of advice to your younger self about the menopause transition, or my third bloom, as I like to call it, what would it be?
What would it be? I would say, Joyelle, there's only one you, and you have one body, and you deserve to prioritize yourself mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually with that journey.
All right, young Joelle, did you hear that? I love that. I love that. Thank you. So, where can our listeners find you?
They can find me on Instagram and Facebook at Dr. Joyelle, and LinkedIn, Dr. Joyelle Ballard. And I'm not really on X, formerly known as Twitter. But yeah, mostly Instagram, Facebook, Dr. Joyelle is that they can find me there. And then I'll obviously my Menopause Moguls podcast on all your podcast listening apps.
Do you have any
And
retreats happening, or is there another book coming out, or
So
what's
no
happening?
retreats, but there's the wheels are turning for that. Books, wheels are turning for that too. Actually, not wheels, I'm actually writing. I am in the midst of writing two books, actually. One of them a lot about self-care, radical self-care for menopause and beyond. So
Ooh, we're gonna have to do a
yeah.
book club for that.
Yes, 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 yes. And people can find my first book on my website at drjoyelle.com.
Awesome. So there you have it, as we wrap up our enlightening conversation with the remarkable Dr. Joyelle. One thing is abundantly clear: her passion for empowering women through the menopause transition, or their third bloom, and self-advocacy and self-care and self-compassion knows no bounds. Dr. Joyelle, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your invaluable insights. your work, the knowledge you dropped on us, the masterclass you gave us on MHT really is invaluable. And I'm sure our listeners have gained a better understanding of how to embrace, maybe even how to advocate, you know, change a doctor if you need to. How can you thrive during the menopause transition? Thank you for tuning in. And until next time, may you approach life's transitions with kindness and compassion, starting with yourself. Let us help you bloom with grace. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of My Third Bloom. If you found value in our conversation, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. Your support means the world to us and helps us reach more incredible souls like you. Remember, you're not alone on this journey. Connect with us on social media at My Third Bloom, visit our website, and be part of our thriving community. Until next time, keep blooming and embracing the beauty of your third bloom. This is Trisha Blake signing off with peace, love, light, and grace.